So I would say to anyone asking that question, no, you can't just take your D2C package, launch it into stores and expect it to perform as well, because it's a different setting.
100%. And then I love that you brought up, as part of our rebrands, we like to walk the store and see what's on the aisle. I always like to encourage people to look at other aisles as well. See if there's interesting packaging that's happening maybe in the beauty category, or interesting packaging happening over in consumer tech, or anything that like really stands out to you as a consumer. Because like, I just like going back to what we talked about last week, which is like the limited definition of the competition that people have, where they only look at the people who are selling the exact same product as them versus looking at who is competing for the disposable income of this customer. Right. And if there are interesting packaging trends or innovations happening in other aisles, you can be the first person in your category to sort of incorporate those things in. Like with great. Welcome to the Omnichannel Roundtable, where we discuss strategic insights at the intersection of in-store and online retail. We're your hosts, Brian Alston and Yemini Mesa. Welcome to your seat at the table. Now let's talk shop. So welcome back to this week's episode of the Omnichannel Roundtable, where we are going to be discussing a bunch of topics specifically focused on in-store performance. One of the questions that we've been asked a lot from brands who that already have some retail footprint or have just gone into stores and maybe are underperforming or not getting the velocities that they're hoping for is, what's going on? What can they do in the short term and in the midterm to really turn that ship around? So yeah, I just wanted to tee that up for Yemini, who's going to share some of his insights on the importance of proper account management and some of the specific ways that we assess where these brands are at and how they can improve this.
Nice. Yeah, I look forward to sharing some insights on that. There's a lot more to account management that I think people often realize. Another question we often get is from clients who are about to launch into retail stores, and they've had great success online, and they're wondering whether or not packaging is going to be able to translate across different channels. So you're going to give us some insights on that one as well. So I look forward to jumping into that also. Awesome. But first, hey, just want to thank everyone for joining us. The podcast is just getting started. I know that there's going to be lots of improvements that happen along the way, including the quality of the sound, which we know we could be working on. But we thank you for bearing with us.
Yeah, awesome.
So effective account management. Often brands, when they enter the retail space, tend to underestimate just how much goes into truly being successful in store. And there's quite a bit that goes into what the brands that are winning are doing versus the brands that are just performing mediocre or just underperforming in general. And let me try and, I guess, summarize some of those things. I can't cover all of them in our podcast today, but probably the most important ones, I guess the first thing would start would be the relationship. So first and most important thing is establishing and cultivating a strong relationship, not just with your buyer or the key decision maker who's going to decide whether or not your products are going to go in there, but at every important level of that retailer's organization. And it varies by channel. So it could be as simple as a mom and pop store, and you're getting to know the mom and the pop and understanding their entire order cycle and how they manage their inventory. And they're the only ones that are doing everything. Or it could be, you know, a national chain with thousands of stores. And in that case, you've got a senior buyer and a category manager and all of their assistants and in-store personnel and just lots of people at different levels that would behoove you to have a very solid relationship with. So it all starts with that. And so brands tend to overlook that. I think they often think that simply putting a broker team in place or hiring a couple sales reps will be more than enough to get in store and get that distribution. And while that might be true, like that might get you in store and help you to get that distribution, if you're going very wide and you don't have enough representation, you're not going to be able to cultivate the kind of relationships you need to have in order to be one of the best performing brands. So that's number one, relationships.
Okay.
Two, what would I say? Two would be, I guess, the assortment itself. Having the optimal assortment in that account is pretty important. Sometimes we're so desperate for that distribution that we'll just take whatever the retailers give us. So they authorize 3 of our 5 products and they omit your best selling one for whatever reason. They already have chocolate on their shelf. They don't want one more chocolate or whatever it may be, but it's your best selling SKU and they don't want it. You can't go in there without your best selling SKU. You're already going to underperform before you even started. But not just that. I mean, even if they do pick all your right SKUs, that might vary by region and might vary even by store. So understanding that optimal assortment on your products and making sure that that's what you have in each one of those stores, also very important. It's, again, when you're thinking about, well, how come we're not performing as well as those guys? Well, those guys have their optimal products and their optimal assortment in those stores. So that's number 2. That's pretty important. Almost as important, but it is number 3, would be the merchandising. And merchandising refers to where the product is placed and how it's placed in the stores. So the obvious first place is the shelf that you belong to. So there's a category that your product belongs to, and that category might have multiple shelves. And so ideally, you're in a prime spot on that shelf with a nice brand block of your optimal products. But the top performing brands don't just stop there, because not only do they have the optimal shelf placement, meaning they're not on the bottom corner somewhere or off on the top where nobody can reach it, but it's in the optimal spot. But they also will have multiple placements throughout the store. So if we're talking about CPG snack items, of course, you have to have something over by the cash register being sold in singles, so you can actually get trial in low price points that are good impulse buys. You, of course, want to have a floor display showcasing your product somewhere in the store that's disruptive, so that people have to see it and they have to ideally bump into your product. End caps are always an amazing place to get placement in. Difficult to do, but again, goes back to that relationship and having a solid relationship with the retailers. But end caps would be another great spot. And then, is there a secondary category that your product potentially could belong to beyond just the one that you're in? So you could, through effective merchandising, go from having 3 SKUs on a shelf somewhere to having those same 3 SKUs in 5 to 8 different spots throughout the store. So imagine what your velocity looks like when it's capturing all of those sales versus just what you have on one shelf somewhere. So the merchandising is pretty important. Part of the merchandising too, though, it also includes like all of the point of sale assets that you could have for the product, which include shelf talkers, the actual floor displays themselves. In specialty channels, often you're able to do quite a bit more, from decals on windows and hanging mobiles from ceilings and floor trippers and decals that you can put on the floor. But all of these things are ideally in place as part of your brand marketing campaigns that are tied into your in-store merchandising. So that all goes into the 3rd important account management tool, which would be merchandising. What would be the 4th one? If I had to, okay, so 4th would be price and promotion. So They go hand in hand. Price, I'll just say, if it's not optimally priced, then you're going to have problems. And so I would look at that. You know, if my products aren't moving, what's happening? Often the price and promotion is the problem. Assuming you're pricing right, like in other words, if you have a retailer that likes to have an everyday low price, EDLP, then you've got a EDLC, everyday low cost, in place, and they're, you know, pricing at that everyday low price optimally. If you don't have that in place for that type of customer, then your pricing's not going to work. Or you may have a high-low customer that likes to promote frequently, and for them, you're going to have to establish the right pricing model. But the promotion component goes well beyond just pricing promotions. Like, who wants to just constantly do price promotions? I don't, especially if you have a premium brand or a brand with, you know, slim margins. So promotion goes well beyond that. I mean, you can think of promotion as one of 2 ways. One, how do I get more of the people who are already in that store to find my product and buy more of it? Retailers don't want you to do that because they want you to get incremental sales, but you want to do that. And of course, that can be done through a number of ways, whether it be sampling or couponing or any kind of in-store promo activity that's going on. But the other way, of course, is to bring additional new traffic into that store, specifically looking for your product. And of course, retailers love that because you're bringing new people into their stores and they're going to buy your products and ideally other stuff as well. And of course, all that ties into your marketing that you may be doing through social or influencers or any other form of marketing that's outside of the store bringing people in. So all that is part of your pricing and promotion. So when you go back and you think through, okay, my items are in store, but we're underperforming, what's happening? Well, first and foremost, do you have a great relationship with everyone in that retailer at all levels? Important, because it is that those folks that are going to help you when your products are out of stock, making sure you've got the right placement, giving you that incremental spot in the store. Sometimes it's just a favor rather than something that's required. So it goes back to that. So the relationship has to be in place. The optimal products have to be authorized and on shelf. The merchandising has to be maximized. So you've got multiple spots throughout the store. And then your pricing and promotion have to be on point so that you're getting trial and generating more sales. If you're missing any one of those, then you got to get with it, because that's what the brands that are winning are all doing.
That's all extremely insightful. And I think that there's a lot of really interesting insights you shared, specifically around how important the incremental foot traffic is to a lot of these buyers. If anything, from the conversations we've had across a lot of chains, that's one of the things that they want. They want to know, is this brand someone who's going to bring net new people to the store or to this aisle? And that could mean like people who like might be normally shopping somewhere else in the store, but is this a brand that they will actively leave that part of the store to walk, which seems like miles, if you think about it, especially if you're looking at a Walmart or a Costco? Are they going to walk somewhere that they might not normally go just for that one brand that they've been seeing all over TikTok, or that one brand that a bunch of their friends love? So yeah, I think that I'm like, great talking points there. And the other piece is, again, the relationships that you're able to build with these retailers, not just through your brokers like us, but also as a brand. If they know that you're someone who is great to work with, if they know that you're someone who's always going to be bringing cool, innovative products to them, they're going to be far more willing to give you some of those end caps or a little bit of extra real estate instead of a brand who just has a transactional relationship with the store.
You want the retailers to think of you as a value-added solution to their day, not as, oh God, here they come again trying to sell me stuff.
Yeah.
You're bringing value to them. You're bringing insights that they may not otherwise know about. Often buyers and category managers are so overwhelmed with the thousands of SKUs that they're managing and all of the demands that are being placed on them. They don't have time to really drill down into the data and really understand the nuances of what might be going on in their sets. So that's a way to really, when I say cultivate relationships, you're bringing value, you're bringing things to them that are helping them with their goals of growing their categories. And then, of course, your brand, your products are a part of that. They're a part of the solution to helping them grow their businesses. So to me, that's the core of the relationship building with the retailer. Not to be confused, by the way, with the pay-to-play, which a lot of people confuse with. I know it's a part of the game, and I know a lot of people do it, and I know it happens more with some retailers than others, but that's not the kind of relationship that I mean. I mean the type of relationship where you're really bringing value to the retailer and they can't wait to see you, because every time you talk to them, you've got some crazy new cool insight to share that's going to help them out.
Yeah, totally. Cool. Was there anything else you want to share? Go on.
Oh, I was going to actually transition to the other questions that we had gotten, which is, I guess, somewhat a little bit tied to this, and that's how things perform in store. But so one of the clients is ready to and eager to go into brick and mortar stores. They've had a very successful launch and scale D2C. They have a nice assortment of products. But they're wondering, will they need to do anything different to their packaging, to their pack sizes? What if anything, might have to change before starting to show up in store shelves?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts there?
That is a long question. And I think that it's a really important question for a lot of brands to consider for a few reasons. One, if you think about e-commerce and you having your own store and your own captive audience, you don't really have to think too much about your packaging. Yes, it has to stand out on the social media feed or stand out on Amazon relative to some of your other competitors. But I would say packaging is probably somewhat less important online than it is on shelf, where you don't have sort of that funnel where you are driving traffic from, let's say, your TikTok account directly to your store. This has to be something that people will see as they're walking through the aisle, whatever the aisle is, and it will not only grab their attention, but will tell enough of a story on the front of the packaging to get them to pick it up and read the rest. And I would say that if you think about packaging in that way, it's, I don't know, it's both an art and a science in store versus online, where you could get away with whatever you want. And of course, the greater than example that I always go back to is a perfect one. For the first few years, we did not change the packaging. We looked like a sports drink that still had people doing a ton of athletic work. They were surfing and hanging off of a cliff, even though our core customers at that time were breastfeeding moms. And right. One of the things that I really, really hammered home during the rebrand process was something that would work omnichannel. So something that would still be a nod and a wink to moms, but more importantly, when the company was ready to go into stores like Target or Walmart or wherever it was, it would stand out visually on the shelf. And that's, I guess, the first piece of insight that I would give to our listeners, or the homework they would do. What I did was literally walked the aisles of everywhere that sold mom and baby products. And I noticed that almost all of them were soft pastels, soft pink, soft blue. It was very cute and cuddly. Whereas the brand that we had, that we cultivated, was more exciting and more fun and more lively and more colorful. So I would say that if you're a brand who's looking to find packaging that's going to work on shelf, you should not copycat who's already there. If anything, you should look at how do we do almost the exact opposite of what the other people in the aisle are doing. So that way you can visually stand out as a total stranger to your brand who might not have ever heard of you, is going to just see you out of the corner of their eye and might actually pick you up and do more research. And that in turn is going to help you online. Because again, if you have a package that is so visually distinctive in store, it's going to get someone to pick you up. I think that that's going to also work on a social media feed. It's going to work on your website. It's going to work on Amazon if you are next to a bunch of competitors who might all look the same. So yeah, I always encourage people when they're thinking of packaging to really lean into visual distinctiveness and having that be one of the primary priorities in order to get...
But that's like an overall thing though, right? That's not like an online versus brick and mortar store. You always want to have a way to stand out from the whole category, whether you're doing that online or in store, right? That reminds me a lot, of course, of Quest Nutrition, because when the brand was initially launched, the target was bodybuilding and fitness enthusiasts.
Yeah. You know,
people who are into physiques and big muscles and very shredded bodies. And if you look then, and perhaps even so today, but a lot more then, all the brands were what we would refer to as chains and veins. All these, you know, hardcore packaging with hardcore bodybuilders and super shredded fitness girls. And we're like, we're not going to do that. We're going to do the opposite of chains and veins. And of course, the Quest packaging has been copied quite a bit since its initial launch, but the entire focus was on flavor and phenomenal taste, which is, you know, bars tasted really good. And all of the positioning from a visual standpoint gravitated away from chains and veins and more toward what you guys now see. And of course, that worked great because the chains and veins crowd were happy to see a product with the great macros that the Quest bars had. They don't need the packaging to have veins and chains all over it. And because we didn't have veins and chains all over the packaging, it was not a turnoff to the average consumer who's also looking for healthy snacks. And then stumbled upon them. So yeah, from a standing out standpoint, for sure. How about you can get away with a lot more flexibility, I think, online, because in fact, you can get away with a lot, because what you present as your packaging online doesn't actually have to be what somebody gets when they get the product at home. And so online, you can have, you know, multiple funnels targeting all these different cohorts with various landing pages, each one with a slightly nuanced package, because, you know, you may be talking to a CrossFitter versus a bodybuilder versus a yoga person making these up. And there may be call outs that vary for each one of these segments. And you can do that online, and you don't have to change your packaging. Everyone can get the same plain brown box once they've purchased the product, with, you know, some nice slicks or something to show colors and all that. Retail, you get one shot. It's on shelf. It's already printed. And whatever call outs or bullet points or brand block or logo, whatever is going to go on there, that is your billboard.
Yeah.
And that may be the single most important marketing material that your brand has. And what that looks like on a Walmart shelf versus a Vitamin Shoppe shelf versus on Amazon versus on D2C, those are all very different looks. Totally. That's all different packaging, different pack sizes, and different callouts.
And I think the beauty of D2C is you can at least have a general idea of, hey, here are the different callouts that we can A/B test. And regardless of if it's going after this cohort or that cohort, it's always number one. So you're right. Like when you're in retail, you have to market it for the masses versus for whatever specific niche. But you can still use online to do a lot of the A/B testing to help at least answer the questions like, what are the main value props? What are some of the key must have talking points that must be on the package versus ones that can be on the back panel?
Right.
And then I think that with retail specifically, for example, if you're just like targeting people who are fans of Walmart with your Facebook ads and you drive them to a landing page that has an A/B test going on with different types of packaging. I mean, I've totally used Canva just to make packaging say whatever I wanted. And within a few minutes, you just put that up online and then you can just see how it performs. And then you're like, hey, when I have this value prop be prominently featured, our conversion rate drops. Right. So, and if like we're targeting Walmart, sure, it's not a perfect science, but it's at least some data that you can use to, again, go back to your point, collaborate with the buyer who knows that aisle and that customer very well. And you can say, hey, here's some of the data that we have. We want to be collaborative with you as we're just doing this new packaging and all of that. Of course, they want the velocities to be high in their aisle as well. And again, going back to your point, it just makes it so much easier of a conversation when you are bringing them data and you're bringing them, here are a few options and we can work with you to massage this versus you just going in with a guess, hoping that whatever you just like land on sells, and it might not.
Well, in a perfect world, we would have figured this out long before we're showing anything to Walmart. And we've already tested this in much smaller retailers at a much smaller scale and figured out, all right, we got optimal packaging here. But even within the different channels in whatever category you're competing in, like we'll use bars because I have easy examples in my head. Because of the different price points across different channels, and because of the price points that you know are going to resonate with your consumer, you end up varying your pack sizes across different channels. So while you may have a 4-pack, I'll make this up, a 4-pack on a Walmart, it may be a 6-pack at a Kroger, and it may be a 12-pack at a Vitamin Shoppe, and a 20-pack at a Costco. And so you may think, yeah, okay, big deal, different pack sizes. But now all these different pack sizes require you to think about what this looks like on shelf in each one of these places. Again, the brands that are winning are paying attention to every one of these details. And so your Costco box might sit upright while your 4-pack in Walmart is sitting this way. And these are two different, you know, branding opportunities with call-outs and logo treatment and all that have to be factored in to your ideal packaging there. And often, as you know, when we do a rebrand with a client, these are all the things that we're thinking through, and we're literally going into the stores, photographing the sets and really understanding what are the common things that are standing out in these categories in terms of color patterns, in terms of callouts, and on, all that gets factored into an overall rebrand and optimal packaging across the different categories. So I would say to anyone asking that question, no, you can't just take your D2C package, launch it into stores and expect it to perform as well because it's a different setting.
100%. And then I love that you brought up as part of our rebrands, we like to walk the store and see what's on the aisle. I always like to encourage people to look at other aisles as well. See if there's interesting packaging that's happening maybe in the beauty category or interesting packaging happening over in consumer tech or anything that really stands out to you as a consumer? Because going back to what we talked about last week, which is like the limited definition of the competition that people have, where they only look at the people who are selling the exact same product as them versus looking at who is competing for the disposable income of this customer. Right. And if there are interesting packaging trends or innovations happening in other aisles, you can be the first person in your category to incorporate those things in. Like with Greater Than, we got a lot of inspiration looking at shampoo in hair. Like, was like, wait, that's a very interesting way to, again, it's a very crowded category. It has a ton of options, but there was some really, really cool innovations happening from a design standpoint in that category that were not happening anywhere in beverage, and especially not in the mom and baby category. And I think that just like goes back into our like philosophy of how to like build a brand castle, which is not solely focusing on, hey, this is a limited view. We're only going to look at two or three brands or players in this space and just do that same playbook. We want to be innovative, and we really want to help these brands think about the full picture. So that way they can be set up for success in the long run. And usually that requires you taking some risks, at least in terms of being innovative and incorporating new and novel ways to stand out to the consumer, whether that's in store or online, but ideally both.
Yeah, great point. Yeah, and I totally agree on looking for design trends across all different categories, even a category that might be the complete opposite of your category. I mean, maybe looking at health foods and you can look at trends in alcohol or some other extreme opposite category. The point is, if you can find a disruptive design, brand design that fits within your brand, obviously, you bring into your space, into your category, then you'll be better for it. So very cool. All right. So we covered some good stuff today. We talked about why might it be that brands are underperforming at retail. And to me, it just goes to account management. If you're doing effective account management, then you should be a top performing brand. And that includes cultivating strong relationships, optimal assortment in store, the merchandising, which has to be on point. And then, of course, pricing and promotion also has to be in place. So as long as all that's checked off, you should be kicking ass in stores. If you're not, then something's wrong with the product. And that's a topic for a whole other episode. But then we also talked about, can I launch my product into stores after successfully launching in D2C or online with the same packaging? And then, of course, the answer was no. And there's lots of reasons that we talked about for that, including what looks great online may not look good on shelf. So these are all things that if you are thinking about growing your brand and wanting to become a market leader with your brand, things that we can help you with.
Extremely well said. Well, cool. I think that brings us to the end of this episode. You know, just keeping it nice and short and sweet. I will talk to you next week on the Omnichannel Roundtable.
Sounds good. Until then.
Are you ready to take your business to new heights? Click on the link below to connect with me and my partner, Brian. We've got one heck of a track record helping companies go from startups to $100 million brands and beyond. And I bet we can do the same for you. So click on the link, give us a call, and we'll be chatting with you soon.